Hey, everybody, it's Katie, and this is episode 84 of the Sugar Mamas podcast. Today, I just want to unpack my summer of 2022. We had so much going on. It was so busy. You may have noticed because I actually took 3 weeks off from the podcast to take a break because of travel and mostly travel. I just didn't want to be editing a podcast while I was on vacation. So between the three big trips that we took, we flew into Nevada, did Arizona and a little bit of Utah to go to Zion National Park. And then I spent a week at summer camp with my two oldest kids chaperoning that situation. It was a church camp. And then we went to Lake Lore, North Carolina for a week, which is something that we do every year with some of our friends and family. So it was a very busy summer. Sarah also did, a week of art camp. She did a week of just kind of like a general summer camp. And she did a 3-day volleyball camp during the summer. So she was a very busy lady. There wasn't a ton of downtime for her. I mean, vacations are downtime, but you know what I mean. So it was big. So I want to talk to you a little bit about travel. I want to talk to you about illness because we had our first major illness with type 1 diabetes. It was actually when we were on vacation, sent Sarah to the hospital. So I want to talk about that a little bit and what we learned. We swam a ton. We have a pool in our backyard. We also love going to the beach. We also spent a week at a lake house. So there was just tons of water activity. We went to a couple water parks. So it was definitely a summer of fun in the sun and in the water. So I want to talk to you about that and about devices and keeping devices on and the best technique that we have found to do that. I want to talk to you about sending Sarah to summer camps that weren't diabetes camps and just how I handled that. And then another huge thing that we did was we switched from the DIY loop system to the Omnipod 5 system at the very end of the summer. That was a huge deal for us. I really wrestled with the decision of whether or not I wanted to do that, and I'll explain a little bit of that later. But first, we're going to do our intro, and we will jump in by me just talking a little bit about my summer mindset and how it has changed from last summer to now, because this is our second summer with type 1 diabetes. Okay, let's get started. You're listening to the Sugar Mamas Podcast, a show designed for moms and caregivers of type 1 diabetics. Here you'll find a community of like-minded people who are striving daily to keep their kids safe, happy and healthy in the ever-changing world of type 1. I'm your host and fellow T1D mom, Katie Roseboro. Enjoy! Before we get started, I need you to know that nothing you hear on the Sugar Mamas podcast should be considered medical advice. Please be safe, be smart, and always consult your physician before making changes to the way you manage type 1 diabetes. Thanks. Okay, my friends, before we start the show, we have an exciting announcement from Stacy Sims, host of the Diabetes Connections podcast. Stacy has put together something very special for type 1 moms in her community, which is in and around Charlotte, North Carolina. Let's take a quick listen and then get back to the show.
What's one thing you need as a mom of a child with type 1? It's time to yourself. I know, go ahead and laugh. But there really is a way to treat yourself to some time away with other moms who get it. I'm Stacy Sims, and my son was diagnosed with type 1 almost 16 years ago, just before he turned 2. Since then, I have attended dozens of diabetes conferences and meetups, and now I've taken the best stuff from those events and created something brand new. I'm calling it Mom's Night Out, and we're going to have lots of diabetes technology for you to see and learn about, stress-relieving social time where you can meet other moms just like us, and speakers who will leave us feeling energized and ready to face the challenges of parenting a child with T1D. Katie's going to hook you up with all the info, but head on over to diabetes-connections.com to get started. Mom's Night Out is happening in January in Charlotte, North Carolina. I hope to see you there. I can't wait.
Thanks so much, Stacy. If you're interested in signing up for that event or you want to find out more information, check out the link that I will leave in the show notes. All right, you guys, let's get back to the show. All right, guys, before we dive into everything that we did this summer, I just want to talk to you about my summer mindset in general. So if you remember, my daughter, Sarah, she was diagnosed in the middle of August of 2020. She was 8 years old, and it was the day before she started third grade. So it was at the very tail end of the pandemic summer. So I don't count that summer as being our first summer with diabetes, even though Sarah certainly was showing signs and symptoms of having type 1, probably for weeks, if not months, before she was actually diagnosed. But we weren't dealing with diabetes management at that time because we had no idea. So I do not consider that our first summer with type 1 diabetes. So she gets diagnosed. You know, we obviously had to deal with all the school stuff, getting her settled in school, learning how to manage diabetes. The school year goes by. She finishes third grade, thank God. And the summer is upon us. And I remember thinking that very first summer with type 1 diabetes, so that would be the summer of 2021. I remember thinking, oh my gosh, I'm so excited to have Sarah home with me during the summer. It's going to be so great because she'll be close to me all day long. I'll be able to keep a little bit more of a tighter control on her blood sugars. And it's just going to be so much easier having her home and not having to kind of juggle the whole texting diabetes situation and not having a nurse at the school and then interrupting her teacher's day if there was kind of like a low blood sugar emergency. So I was just so ready for her to be home with me during the summer to have better control. What I didn't realize is that none of that was true. Managing diabetes was not easier in the summer. In fact, I honestly think it's so much harder to manage diabetes in the summer. Now, that's not to say that other parts of life aren't easier, right? It's always a give and a take and a trade-off because I would say lots about life is easier in the summer. I love having a break of not having to pack school lunches. Packing school lunches are the bane of my existence. And I know everybody says, have your kids pack their own lunches. And they do a lot of the time, or at least they'll help me kind of figure out what they want to have. But you know how it is, like the day gets away from you and all of a sudden it's bedtime and it's like, we don't have time for you to pack your lunch, or I don't want to deal with this at 8:30 at night. Like, just go to bed. So anyway, I loathe packing lunches. I always love summertime to have a break from that. I just love summertime. I'm a Florida girl through and through. I love being in the pool. I love being at the beach. I just love the more relaxed summer vibe. I love a break from homework. Oh my gosh, can't stand having to help my kids with homework. I'm really sounding like a great parent, I know. But you know, it's just always such a struggle. I mean, I'm happy to help them and I'm glad I'm available to do that. But you know how it is. Like, kids do so much better listening to their teachers than they do to their parents trying to be their teacher and explain how to do long division. I also love just having a break from extracurriculars. You know, I don't have to shuffle people here, there, and everywhere to baseball practice and dance. It's really wonderful. However, while all of those things are a nice break from life, I would say managing type 1 diabetes is a lot harder in the summer. And it's definitely because there is no routine. You know, in school, they eat lunch at the same time every day. They eat snack at the same time every day. You know that they're going to be sitting and doing schoolwork from this time to this time. And at this time, they're going to go outside on the playground. So you know what their schedule and what their activity levels and when they're eating, when all that's going to happen during the day. Well, in the summer, there's no schedule. There's no routine, unless, of course, they're at a summer camp. But that was so hard for me. You know, people would wake up and they wouldn't want to eat breakfast until 10:30. And then right after they ate breakfast, they'd want to jump in the pool. But they had all this insulin on board from their breakfast bolus. And then maybe at 2 o'clock, we'd get around to eating lunch, but it's not a real lunch because people just want to eat cheese sticks and yogurt for lunch. And then who knows when we're going to be eating snack later in the day. And there's late nights because people are staying up later. We don't have to have that tight bedtime. People are getting in and out of the pool again, running up and down the street, playing with friends. I mean, it all sounds magical and wonderful, and it is. But when it comes to managing type 1 diabetes in the midst of all that, it makes it pretty challenging. And I know some of you are thinking, some of you type A moms out there are thinking like, well, Katie, you could just have a routine and have a schedule during the summer. Like, you could tell your kids we're eating snacks at 10 o'clock every day, end of story, and we're eating lunch every day at 12:30, blah, blah, blah. But you know what? That's just not how I roll. That is not my personality. I have tried schedules like that, and I just feel like that never works for me. Like, we always fail at keeping to a routine and a schedule in the summer when it comes to eating lunch and snack and things like that. I am definitely that mom that every single summer I'm like, okay, guys, we're going to do 15 minutes of math and 15 minutes of reading every day. And I bought you these workbooks and look at these, aren't they great? And then about 2 weeks into summer, I'm like, you know what? Forget this. This was a bad idea. Let's just go to the beach instead. So that's the kind of mom I am, if you're looking to a little insight into my world. But anyway, so all that to say, just give yourself some grace in the summertime. Things are off schedule. Things are off routine. That makes managing type one a little bit more challenging. So just keep that in mind. Go with the flow. I will say this summer was a lot with the swimming situation because I've kind of learned how to manage insulin and blood sugars while Sarah is swimming. And I will talk a little bit about that later in the episode. Please always keep in mind, I am not a doctor. I am not an endocrinologist. I'm not a diabetes educator. I'm just sharing with you all what we do and what has worked for us most of the time and our experiences. And maybe that will get the ball rolling for you or give you some ideas. But I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just telling you what we do so you can kind of compare notes. All right, let's talk a little bit about traveling. Listen, if you are a newly diagnosed family and you have travel plans coming up and you are a little bit freaking out about those travel plans because now you have to think about and worry about diabetes while you are on vacation, I'm here to tell you that it's going to be okay, and do not let fear control your decisions when it comes to travel plans and vacation plans. You just keep on keeping on with the plans that you have or the dreams that you have or the vacation bucket list that you wrote down 5 years ago. Do not cancel your travel plans or your vacation plans because of type 1 diabetes. My favorite piece of advice that I have ever been told was from Maura McCarthy. She is the author of Raising Teens with Diabetes. I interviewed her in a previous episode. I will leave a link to that episode in the show notes. But she said to me, ask yourself, by the way, she has a daughter with type 1 who is grown and flown out of the house and doing really, really well in life. So she's a seasoned type 1 mama. And she told me, ask yourself, what would the answer have been before diabetes? If the answer would have been yes, then it needs to be yes even after diabetes. You just have to figure out how to make it work. If the answer would have been no before diabetes, then the answer needs to be no after diabetes. I like to think of the example of, you know, I've never been the mom that's like, here, kids, here's a dozen donuts from Dunkin', have at it. I'm like, okay, we're going to go out and get donuts, but we're going to get one donut because really and truly, nobody needs more than one donut. We're going to continue eating donuts, even though one of our family members now has type 1 diabetes. But we're also going to continue with our rule of you may get one donut at a time. So it's stuff like that. Would I have said no to 3 donuts before diabetes? Yes. And am I still going to say no to 3 donuts after diabetes? Yeah, I am. I had a mom reach out to me once and she was just in a panic because her teenage son had just gotten diagnosed with type 1. It was right at the end of the school year and they had all these travel plans for summer. And she just was very, very concerned about what their vacation was going to look like now that type 1 diabetes was in the mix. I told her and I encouraged her, you just have to go and do it. You have to show your child that life is not going to stop or be put on pause because of this disease. Like, I know you're scared and I know it's so incredibly intimidating, but for the sake of your child's mental well-being, you've got to just push through your fear and make it happen. I always remind myself that really and truly, as long as we have insulin with us and a way to get it into my daughter's body, and as long as we have enough low snacks with us, plenty of juice boxes, candy, whatever you may use, we're going to be fine. Crazy things could and probably will happen sometimes, but as long as you have insulin and as long as you have enough low treatments, you're going to get through any situation. Is it always going to look pretty and amazing? No, nothing's perfect, but you will get through it. So definitely don't cancel your travel plans because of type 1. One of my very good friend's daughter was diagnosed at the beginning of the summer last year. And I think she was diagnosed on a weekend, maybe like a Friday or Saturday. And they had plans to go out of town for an entire month the following, I think, Thursday or Friday. And she spent about an hour panicking about that. But thankfully, her daughter's endocrinologist told her, not to cancel that trip. Just take all the supplies with you. I know where you're going to be vacationing. If I need to write you extra prescriptions while you're there, it's okay. You're going to figure it out. Do not cancel your travel plans. And you know what? They went and it was great. And they learned how to do type 1 diabetes while they were on vacation. I was really proud of her for not canceling those plans. I think that was a really hard decision for her, but I was really proud of her for pushing through. So it can be done. Okay, let's talk a little bit about packing. Basically, I could just summarize this by saying you need to pack a lot of stuff, but specifically, you just need to have extra supplies. My daughter is on the Omnipod system, currently on the Omnipod 5 system. So when we travel, we bring enough pods, honestly, for about a month, which would be about 10 pods. We usually don't travel anywhere for longer than a week. So that's kind of a ridiculous amount of pods. We absolutely have never used that many pods while we're on vacation. In fact, usually we just have to use like one extra pod, if any at all. But I like to be prepared. You never know what's going to happen. And I also like to spread them out a little bit. Like I don't like to have them all in one place. Like I might put a couple in my purse and I might put a couple in my suitcase and I might put a couple in my daughter's diabetes go bag and then our travel bag. Just so they're spread out in case something gets lost, we will have a few extra pods. Obviously, you need insulin. Even if you're on a pump, I would bring lots of fast-acting insulin, whether you're on Novolog or Fiasp or Humalog. And then I would also bring, even if you're on a pump, I would bring a couple pins of long-acting insulin. We were on Traceba before Sarah started on the Omnipod, and I always just throw a few pins of Traceba in our travel bag to have just in case, because you never know. The pump might fail, the pump might break, you might run out of pods, or your kid might just get sick of wearing a pump while you're on vacation and want to take a little break, and that's fine too. So make sure you're prepared with both fast-acting and long-acting insulin when you travel. Of course, we have all the normal stuff, adhesive remover wipes, alcohol prep wipes, test strips, glucometer, Lancets, extra Dexcom sensors. I usually bring two or three extra Dexcom sensors. We have lost a Dexcom sensor while on vacation. In fact, we lost two once on vacation. So I usually bring three just because I've experienced that before. And I was really glad I had three. And then of course we called the company and got the other ones replaced. That was a little bit of a mess. I think that was actually our first trip after diagnosis. It was. We went to the Keys in Thanksgiving of 2020, which I know y'all are thinking, you're doing an awful lot of traveling for the year of the pandemic, but you know, you only live once. I always bring an extra Dexcom transmitter too. The way I kind of hack the system as far as prescriptions is I just make sure I refill my prescriptions as soon as I possibly can, which is usually earlier than when you're actually going to run out. So like Dexcom sensors, for example, I can usually, after I fill that prescription and pick it up from the pharmacy, I'll get on the app that I use. We pick up our prescriptions at CVS Pharmacy. So I'll get on the CVS app and see when is the earliest time I can refill those prescriptions. And typically it's like a little less than 3 weeks, maybe 20 days out from the day that you picked up the prescription. So technically, if you do that every single time, and I set a reminder in my phone so I don't have to refill it when the earliest that I possibly can. But if you do that every time, whether it's Dexcom sensors or insulin or Omnipods or whatever it may be, you will eventually have a little bit of a stockpile. And that way you'll always have a few extra on hand in case something goes wrong. So that's my little tip and trick for you today. What else do I pack? I pack scissors. I pack glucagon, of course. And I, now that we have gone through a major illness on trips, I like to pack one of those old school red glucagon kits that Lilly makes, which unfortunately I think it's being discontinued at the end of the year, which is really unfortunate. But make sure you bring your glucagon, whether you have the injectable kind or the nasal spray. I would pack a few extra of those. Bring lots of low treats. That goes without saying. We always have lots of juice boxes and candy on hand when we travel, even though I know you can stop and buy that pretty much anywhere. Oh, always bring a waterproof pouch for your phone. When we travel, we usually end up near some sort of body of water, and I like to have waterproof pouches. In fact, I like to have it for my phone as well, even though I think my iPhone is waterproof, but I like to have my phone in a waterproof pouch and Sarah's phone in a waterproof pouch as well. And if you're on Omnipod, you might want to think about getting an extra waterproof pouch for the Omnipod PDM. Oh, patches, bring lots of patches. Usually vacations involve either water or lots of activity, so there's a lot of sweat and your devices can fall off more easily. So bring patches for the Dexcom, bring patches for the Omnipod, Libre, whatever it is you're using, SkinTac. I'm going to describe the technique we have for keeping devices on a little later in the episode, but bring those things. Ketone strips, that's something that you want to pack. I didn't think I would need those until Sarah got super sick, but bring those ketone strips. I feel like I'm missing something that's super obvious, but for now, I think that's a pretty comprehensive list of the things you need to bring while you are traveling. Okay, I want to talk about airplanes because this was our first time flying with type 1 diabetes when we went to Arizona. But honestly, it was kind of a non-issue. I thought it was going to be a big deal. I've done an episode, I will link to this one in the show notes as well, with TSA Cares. If you're really, really worried about navigating the airport with your type 1 diabetic, you can always, if you're in the States, you can always call TSA Cares. And they will help you when you get to the airport. You can have them meet you at the front of the airport before you even go through security, and they will walk you through the entire process. They are so sweet. They're there to help. So take advantage of that if you're a little worried about your type 1 diabetic getting through security in the airport. For us, honestly, it wasn't even a thing. We went right through. Sarah went through the metal detector. She didn't have to go through the body scanner. I think the Dexcom and the Omnipod would have been fine in the body scanner, but had they made her go into the body scanner, I probably would have gone into my spiel about type 1 and what her devices did to maybe try and avoid that and just do the metal detector instead. But that was not an issue. They just let her walk on through and didn't even say anything about her devices. So I will say flying, I didn't really notice a huge difference with Sarah's blood sugar when we were taking off, when we were landing. They were pretty, I would say, normal, quote unquote, because what's really normal throughout the whole flight? We were on the DIY loop system at the time. So I think I had set an override to give her a little bit more insulin while we were like sitting on the plane just because she's inactive and we were eating snacks. And that worked out pretty well for us. I don't remember having any significant highs or lows while we were on the air. Once we got off the airplane in Arizona, I was very prepared for her blood sugars to be a lot lower because of the higher altitude. But honestly, I didn't notice a huge difference with that either. I mean, we had done a few things differently with the loop system to be prepared for that. We had set the target glucose level a little higher. I think we had set an override, so it was giving her maybe 20 or 30% less insulin than what she normally gets for basal and bolus. But again, that didn't seem to be as big of a deal as I thought it was going to be, which is kind of true for everything with diabetes. We've got Halloween coming up, and I remember the first Halloween, I was totally freaked out thinking, oh my gosh, this is going to be awful. But it was fine. It was fine. All that extra walking with Sarah going from house to house, gathering up her candy, helped keep her numbers nice and steady and stable. Okay, so what I really want to talk to you about with travel is the illness that we experienced. We landed in Las Vegas on a Saturday. We had a great afternoon. We went to Red Rock Canyon. On Sunday, we drove to the Hoover Dam and did the Hoover Dam tour, and then we drove to Flagstaff. And then on Monday, we woke up. It was actually Memorial Day that day, and we drove to the Grand Canyon, which is something that's on my bucket list. So I was so excited to go see the Grand Canyon. We got to the Grand Canyon. We saw the views. They were magnificent. We went and did a little hike that was highly recommended for first timers. It ended up being only about a 3-mile hike, but it was intense. I think it was Angel's Landing or something like that. Angel something. But we made the mistake of wearing some warmer clothes because it was pretty cool in the morning when we got there. And, you know, we could kind of strip off our shirts. We had tank tops underneath. We had jackets first. We could take those off. Then we could take the heavier shirt off and just wear the tank top. But everybody wore pants. And that was a mistake because it was pretty hot by the time we were done hiking. So it was a beautiful hike. We went 1.5 miles down and then we had to turn around and come 1.5 miles back up. And Sarah, I could just tell she was struggling a little bit. Like she was having trouble breathing. Like she was a little congested, which we probably shouldn't even have attempted a hike with her being congested. Not horrible, but still. Anyway, she was a little congested. And on the when we turned around to come back up, she was just, I don't know, I couldn't tell if it was because she was panicking a little bit because she felt like she couldn't breathe very well or if she truly couldn't breathe very well. By the way, her blood sugars were totally fine this whole hike. I think I had increased the target glucose level on her DIY loop before we started hiking. So that held her pretty steady and stable. She only had to drink a juice box once and eat a few Skittles here and there. But anyway, long story short, the hike up was rough for Sarah. She just wasn't feeling very well and she was really hating life coming back up. We had to end up stopping like maybe every 30 feet or so she could just kind of rest and catch her breath. My husband gave her a piggyback ride for some of it. I mean, it was only a mile and a half back up, but it was a struggle to get back up. So we get back up to the top. We're just refilling our waters, resting. We go find some lunch. Everybody's happy now. We check out a few gift shops. Sarah eats a full lunch and seems perfectly fine. Happy hippie skippy. And then we get on the Grand Canyon trolley to go see some more of the sights. And we're on that trolley for maybe 10 minutes. And Sarah just kind of went palish green and looked up at my husband and said, I think I'm going to be sick. And lo and behold, as soon as we got her off that trolley, and thank God we got her off when we did, but she just got sick everywhere, like vomiting profusely all over the loading platform of the Grand Canyon trolley. So if you happen to be at the Grand Canyon on Memorial Day of 2022 and you saw a 10-year-old girl throwing up right next to the trolley, that was probably my daughter. She threw up twice after that. Of course, by this point in time, we are immediately walking to the car to get her set back up in the car. And it was just all downhill from there. Thank goodness, because I was worried because she had taken she had taken this insulin before she ate her lunch. And not even an hour later, she had vomited up her entire lunch. So I was worried that she was going to start tanking really quickly. I was thinking we needed to get some food in her ASAP. So luckily she was able to kind of suck on a few Smarties. She was able to get a juice box down. Thankfully she didn't have, I had like shut her insulin off at this point in time. And thankfully she was able to get that down. Anyway, she fell asleep in the car on the way back to the hotel. And we get back to the hotel and probably once we get her inside and get her settled, she just started vomiting and she got sick probably every 45 minutes from, let's see, what time was it? Maybe 4 o'clock in the afternoon until the next morning. She was throwing up profusely every 45 minutes. It was rough. I mean, it was almost like she was barely conscious. She was kind of like, couldn't even sit up straight. I was obviously trying to push fluids, trying to get water and ice chips in her, sips of Gatorade, nibble on a goldfish, whatever we could do to give her something in her system, but she just could not keep it down. I have never seen my daughter this sick. She had to go into the hospital when she was 5 days old because she had RSV. So other than this time at the Grand Canyon that I'm telling you about right now, that was probably the sickest I've seen her. But in between that stint in the hospital when she was 5 days old, and then of course, if we're not counting the diagnosis of type 1 diabetes, but this illness that I'm telling you about right now is the sickest I've ever seen my daughter. She's never had a stomach virus like this. So immediately I start thinking, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? So I pull out my Think Like a Pancreas information that's tucked away in the back of my brain. And I know that you want to try to be pushing fluids as much as possible because you don't want them to get dehydrated. You want to try to be pushing insulin as much as possible because you don't want those ketones to develop and you want to get them flushed out of the system. So I started immediately when Sarah started throwing up, her blood sugar number started climbing, which you kind of think it would be the opposite, right? You'd think, oh, they can't keep anything down. They're going to drop. Well, she immediately started climbing. So I start pushing insulin. And I honestly was probably pushing about a unit or maybe more of insulin into her every single hour from the time she started vomiting until the next morning at like 8 o'clock in the morning. That's a lot of insulin for somebody who's not eating any food and who weighs like 70 pounds. And let me tell you, her number would not budge. I mean, she probably sat in the upper to lower 200s for that entire time. I don't know that she ever got over 300. I don't remember. But even with all that insulin and her not eating a single thing, she stayed up there. And I just had to keep reminding myself that we have glucagon if we need it. Right now, she needs insulin and she needs fluids. to get those ketones out of her system, because at this point in time, because I had those ketone strips, I could test her ketones and they were very large. So I knew that what she needed at the moment was insulin and fluids. And I just had to keep reminding myself, you know, it's terrifying giving your child this much insulin when she can't hold anything down, but I have the glucagon if I need it. That's what it's there for. So I just kept pushing that insulin. By the time we woke up the next morning, because my husband and I were having the conversation, of course, of what should we do? What if she doesn't get better? Should we take her to the hospital? So by the time we woke up the next morning and Sarah was still throwing up every 45 minutes or so, still couldn't keep even an ice chip down, we decided, okay, it was time to go to the hospital. Her ketones were large. Her blood sugar was high. We knew that it was time to go to the hospital, which that's a scary thing to do when you're halfway across the country or more. You're almost all the way across the country, actually, going from Florida to Arizona. So we took Sarah to the Flagstaff Medical Center. They were amazing. I wish I could remember their names and give them a shout out, but they were fantastic. I had to be pretty bold up front, and I immediately said, you know, she has type 1 diabetes. She's wearing a glucose monitor and she's wearing an insulin pump. I didn't even say if it's okay with you. I just said, I want to leave those on her body and I will manage her diabetes while we're here. I'm not going to leave her side. And they didn't even fight back. They were like, fine, that's great. That's awesome. We would appreciate it if you did that. In fact, take some of the work away from us. So I just went in bold and big and was like, look, you're not taking this stuff off of her body. And they were fine with it. So definitely advocate for your kid if they ever have to be in the hospital. Try to keep those devices on them if you can. So luckily, they did not have to admit us into the hospital. They started running an IV of fluids on Sarah immediately once we got settled in the ER. And it was the craziest thing I've ever seen. I'm not even kidding you. Within 5 minutes of her having that IV in her arm and that IV drip going, her blood sugar started coming down. It is that The one lesson I took away from that experience is how important hydration is to blood sugar numbers. Like, I had no idea the effect that dehydration could have on your blood sugar until I saw that happen. I mean, it was crazy how Sarah couldn't keep any fluids in her for over, well, not even 24 hours, but the instant she started getting fluids and getting hydrated, her blood sugar started coming down immediately. And it leveled out pretty nicely. I didn't even have to have her treat a low. It just kind of gradually came down and leveled out, which was great. They pumped her full of fluids. They only gave her half a bag of fluids. And I was like, hey, look, we are on vacation and we would like to attempt to continue on with our vacation if possible. So considering the fact that she has been vomiting for the past like 12 hours straight, could you maybe give her that second half of the fluid bag? They did the calculations based on her weight and everything, and they decided that it would be fine. So they gave her the second half of the bag. So just keep that in mind. Again, advocate for your kid if you think they need it. They ran a bunch of tests on Sarah. They checked her for multiple viruses and stomach bugs and all that sort of stuff, and nothing came back positive. So we have no idea what caused her to get so sick. I kind of think it might have been altitude sickness. But honestly, by the end of the week, I was actually had come down with a little something, not nearly as bad as Sarah's, but still bad. So maybe it wasn't altitude sickness. Maybe it was a contagious virus that they just didn't test for, so we didn't know about. Anyway, that's what I wanted to tell you about illness and traveling. We did our best to continue on with the vacation. Sarah, it took her the rest of the week to recover. Her and I spent a lot of time taking naps and watching TV. My husband and I would switch off doing activities with the boys. Unfortunately, Sarah missed out on quite a bit of stuff on our trip, but truth be told, she was just not well enough or strong enough to even attempt it. Thankfully, she was well enough and strong enough to, by the time we left on Saturday, to get through the airport and get through the plane ride home, and we made it home safely. But I've already told her, I was like, sweetheart, we need to have a redo. Maybe one day in life when you're an adult, you and I can go back and do some of the stuff, especially some of the stuff in Zion National Park that we missed out on because you were so sick. So I've got that in the back of my mind. All right, I want to talk to you a little bit about swimming and insulin because that was such a huge part of our summer. And I know it's a big part of a lot of people's summers. So as I mentioned, you know, there was times where Sarah would eat a meal and I would give her all the insulin for the carbs in the meal. And then a friend would knock on the door and they would want to hop in the pool. And I'm sorry, but I'm just not the mom that's going to be like, sweetheart, you need to wait 2 hours before you can get in the pool with your friend. I'm like, no, you can get in the pool. We'll figure this out. So kind of my strategy was, if Sarah was going to go swimming and she had a lot of insulin on board, I would turn her insulin off immediately or do a very significant temp basal decrease, like as soon as I knew she was going to get in the pool. And then I would all, because she's on a pump again, and then I would also give her some sort of a snack. Usually it was something with, like, I don't know, anywhere from 15 to 30 carbs, depending on how much insulin she had on board. You're just going to have to figure that out for yourself. If Sarah did not have a whole lot of insulin on board, sometimes, like if it had been a long time, like 3 or 4 hours before she had any bolus insulin in her, a lot of times she could just jump in the pool and swim without any intervention and she would be fine. If we were kind of in the middle of that period, you know, it had been maybe an hour and a half or 2 hours since she had eaten, so I know she still had some insulin on board, but not as much as in the beginning, then I might give her a little snack. Again, turn the insulin off or do a temp basal decrease way down, maybe like 80 to 90% down as soon as she got in the pool, and just check her in about 40 to 45 minutes. I have learned that with Sarah, it's good enough for us to get her out of the pool every 40 to 45 minutes to have her reconnect to the Dexcom or to do a finger prick to check. I don't feel like we need to get it her any sooner than that, but I feel like going a little bit longer, an hour or so, would be too long to maybe catch a low that was happening. So I would just know, hey, we've got about 45 minutes. You can enjoy yourself. And then we're going to have to hop out of the pool and check your number. I will say one of the biggest things that I learned about swimming for Sarah and insulin is that if I had to turn off her insulin or turn it way down when she was swimming, and then I figured out that as soon as she got out of the pool, I would have to give her a bolus of insulin for the basal insulin that she missed, like immediately, or she would start to climb very, very quickly, which is just insane to me that she could spend, you know, 2 hours swimming with her insulin off or her insulin way down. And if I didn't give her a bolus for the basal that she had missed while she was swimming, she would immediately start to climb as soon as that activity was over. So, you know, an example of that would be Sarah's basal rate is 1 unit an hour, which it's not, but I'm just easy math. If she was getting in the pool for 2 hours, I would turn the insulin, let's just say I would turn it off for that 2 hours. As soon as she got out of the pool, even if her blood sugar was like 80, I would have to give her a bolus of 2 units of insulin and turn her pump back on, her basal insulin back on and running, or else she would climb significantly. Her blood sugar would climb significantly. That's kind of a scary thing to do when your kid has been swimming for 2 hours and they get out of the pool and their blood sugar is 80 and steady. It's like, yikes, am I really going to give her 2 units of insulin right now because her basal has been off for 2 hours? But for us, we just kept seeing this pattern over and over and over again of her blood sugar shooting up after she would get out of the pool when her insulin was off. And it became a pattern for us. So finally I was like, look, we're just going to give this a try. I'm going to bolus for the basal that you missed. Worst case scenario, I've got to give you a juice box or two. Okay, or we got to eat some popsicles. I mean, that doesn't sound like a worst case scenario to me. And honestly, I don't think I ever had to utilize those popsicles or juice boxes once because those patterns continued to happen. And when I would bolus for the basal that she missed, she wouldn't spike, she wouldn't climb, she would just stay nice and steady. So maybe pay attention to that. Maybe that's not a problem for you. Just something to think about. All right, I want to talk about keeping on those devices when you're having a really heavy water day. Maybe you're going to the beach. Maybe you're spending the day in a lake, in the pool, at a water park. Or maybe it's just a really hot and sweaty day in the summertime and you need something to keep those patches on. Okay, this is what we do. We have found that this is the best strategy to keep things on really, really snug and really, really securely. What I do, let's say I'm going to put on Sarah's Omnipod. I rub the skin down with alcohol, let that dry. Then I take the liquid skin tack and I put it on her skin and I leave a little spot where the Omnipod tube is going to be inserted. Or I had a very smart listener tell me that they actually put the skin tack directly onto the Omnipod backing. So that way they can just paint around the hole where the Omnipod cannula is going to come out. So I was putting skin tack on Sarah's skin, and then I was putting the Omnipod on top of that, activating the pod. And then I was putting a sim patch over the Omnipod. Listen, if you need a patch that is going to withstand a nuclear bomb and keep your child's Omnipod on their body, it's it's going to be the Simpatch patch. These things are so super sticky. They will get the job done on those crazy water days or crazy hot and sweaty days in the summer. In fact, they're almost too sticky. Like, I love them, but I also hate them because when you go to take them off, there is so much sticky goo left over that I have to go through a lot of adhesive remover in order to get all that extra sticky goo off. So they get the job done, but they're a pain in the butt to take off. But just keep that in mind. I'd rather deal with the extra goo in the end then have pods and Dexcoms falling off left and right. We spent a week at Lake Lure, North Carolina, and I mean, we play hard when we are on vacation. Sarah was swimming like all day long. They had one of those floating mats that you can lay on and run on and jump off of. They were wrestling on it. We went tubing, and Sarah wears her Omnipods on her thigh, and she lays down on the tube on her stomach. So her thighs are like bouncing up and down on this tube the whole time. You guys, we did not lose one Omnipod the whole trip, and we were on the water for like six straight days. It was amazing. So it will get the job done. You're just going to have to deal with a little extra sticky goo on your kid's skin. You know, that nice dirt patch that forms when you think you got all the goo off, but you really didn't get all the goo off. And then like 2 days goes by and you like, you know, see your kid's arm or leg or whatever in the mirror, and you're like, oh my gosh, who knew there was this much dirt in our life? How did that collect on your arm like that? You guys know what I'm talking about. I had a couple people, because I actually did a post about those patches a while ago, or about skin tack and just our technique to hold things in place. And I had a couple parents comment that their children are allergic to skin tack, or that skin tack burned their skin, or their kids had sensitive skin. So there was a couple comments that were helpful. One lady said that they used IV prep instead of skin tack, and that because their child's skin was also very sensitive to skin tack, and that seemed to help really well. I also had another parent comment that Cavalon cream is a barrier cream, and if you put that on the skin before you put skin tack on, it creates a nice barrier between the skin and the skin tack, but still allows the skin tack to do its job. So those might be some things that you could try if you have a kid that is prone to irritability with those adhesives. The other thing I wanted to mention about our summer of 2022 is that Sarah went to quite a few camps. She went to a week of art camp. She went to a week of just a regular summer camp, and she did a 3-day volleyball camp as well. None of these camps were diabetes camps. Again, don't be scared to send your kids to camp just because they have type 1 diabetes. Are you going to need to find the director of that camp and the camp counselors and make sure they are well informed and prepared and well aware that they have a camper with T1D? Yes. Should you also maybe consider looking for camps that have a nurse on staff at the camp? Yes. I think that would be a good idea. One of the camps, just the general summer camp that Sarah did, it was at a little private school that's around the corner from us, and I had no idea that they had a full-time nurse on staff during the week. And so like the week before camp, I emailed the camp director to let him know, hey, my daughter's 10, she has type 1 diabetes, this is how we manage it. Do you think I could have the numbers of her counselors and blah, 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 and just kind of getting the ball rolling for like, you know, I didn't ask for permission, like, hey, can my daughter come to your camp? I'm telling you, my daughter is coming to your camp, and this is how I would like to handle it. How can we work together to make it a successful week for her? But the director emailed me back and was like, we actually have a full-time nurse on staff that's going to be here during our summer camp. So I'm going to put you in contact with her, and you all can discuss best ways to manage and keep Sarah safe next week while she's here. You guys, I was so excited. Well, actually, to be quite honest, at first I'm like, okay, that's great, but we're used to kind of managing things without a nurse. Her school doesn't have a nurse, so it's really just her and I. So I will definitely get the number and the email of the nurse, but I really don't know how much I'm going to need her or use her. Let me tell you guys, I was texting with that nurse probably like 6 or 7 times a day because there was a pool at this summer camp, and my daughter isn't great at pre-bolusing when she's not with me. So, you know, there were some things, some highs and lows, to say the least, during the week, and I was so grateful that that nurse was there. Could it have been done without the nurse? Yeah, probably. And also, the summer camp was literally 8 minutes away from our house. So in a true emergency, I could have hopped in the car and driven there. But I was so grateful that that nurse. So maybe ask around, hey, do you have a nurse that's on staff and that's going to be here during the summer? Also, a good idea might be sending your kid to camp with another friend that has type 1 diabetes, and that way they can kind of look out for each other while they're there. Another really good reason to get plugged into the type 1 community around you. JDRF is a great place to start. See if there's a local chapter near you. Next year, I really want to send Sarah to a diabetes summer camp, like a spend the night sleepaway one. There's one that's pretty close to us, a couple hours away in our state of Florida. It looks really fun. I was following their social media page over the summer, and I was kept showing Sarah the pictures of the camp, and she seemed really excited about it. So I'm actually reminding myself that I need to email the camp director and see when registration starts and what weeks they're going to have camp next year. So stay tuned on how that goes. I already have a couple friends that I'm planning on sending her with. Okay, the last thing I want to talk about with our summer of 2022 is the fact that we switched from the DIY loop system to the Omnipod 5 system. Very soon, I'm hoping to do an episode kind of comparing the two and just talking about how our experience with the Omnipod 5 is going so far. I think that would be a really interesting one for listeners. Again, I wouldn't be telling you what to do. I would just be telling you what we've done so you can maybe kind of think about a few things. But I will say last May, so May of 2022, at the beginning of that month, we had a couple weeks that were just awful. It was kind of one of those things where I was like dumping insulin into Sarah and like nothing was moving. She was very, very high for a very long time. And I just got so frustrated and so fed up that I made a pretty rash decision to put her on the DIY loop system. And that is a big deal. For those of you that don't know, DIY Loop is a non-FDA approved app that you have to build yourself on a computer and then transfer onto your phone to deliver your kid's insulin. I actually went out and bought a MacBook Air to do this. I mean, honestly, my other computer was a dinosaur and it was time for an upgrade anyway. But so I went out and I bought a MacBook Air. Just so you know, it is possible to do it on other computers, other laptops and computers. But like I said, it was time for us to upgrade our computer anyway because it was a dinosaur and it was working so very slowly. That whole process was extremely intimidating to me. However, I will say there is a website called Loop Docs that will walk you through the entire process of how to do this from step one until the end. And it is amazing because I read the Loop Docs website probably two times all the way through before I even started. And then I read it through very slowly and carefully when I was going through how to build this myself. I followed each step exactly. And to my surprise, I actually ended up building this program successfully and putting it on my daughter's phone. I honestly was shocked. I did not think I could do it, but the instructions they give you on the Loop Docs website are phenomenal. The people that created the Loop system are geniuses. I will leave a link in the show notes to the Loop Docs website so you can see it for yourself if you're interested. Loop is an app that's only available on iPhone. There is also another DIY system that you can build for Android, and that is called OpenAPS. There's information on the Loop Docs website about OpenAPS, but I can also leave a link in the show notes to more about that if you're interested. Honestly, I'm going to leave a link in the show notes to the Looped Facebook group because that was created by the people that developed the Loop system and that maintain it. And they're kind of like tech support and customer support. Like if something goes wrong with your Loop system, you hop on that Facebook group and you ask your question and they will help you troubleshoot and figure it out. They are also amazing and genius level people. So if you're interested in the Loop system, it really is an amazing system. It might have already come out, but pretty soon, I don't know exactly when, but Loop 3 is going to be out of the dev branch and into the master branch. And Loop 3 allows you to use Omnipod dash pods and your iPhone without the need for a Riley link. I didn't even mention the Riley link, but you also need this little device called a Riley link or an Orange link to help your pod and your Dexcom communicate. It's a whole thing, y'all. Honestly, I'm just not super well versed in it. So take a look at the links that I'm going to leave in the show notes if you want to take a look and figure it out for yourself. But with Loop 3, if I didn't complete that thought before, with Loop 3, it would eliminate the need for the Orange Link or the Riley Link. You would just need your Dexcom, your Omnipod Dash, and your phone. So that's one huge benefit of Loop. Another huge benefit of Loop, without going into a lot of detail, is it's very customizable. You can set the targets a lot lower than what you can on like other FDA-approved automated systems like the Tandem Control IQ and the Omnipod 5. So there are definitely some huge benefits to doing the DIY Loop. But honestly, it just wasn't for us. Do I respect the people that created it? Absolutely. Do I think they're amazing and geniuses? Yes, I do. Do I think it's an awesome system? Yes, I do. But it just wasn't for us. And I think it was the tech. Like I never had a whole lot of peace about having to build this tech. You also have to rebuild it every single year. There is a chance that it could crash and then you'd have to go in and start from square one and rebuild the whole thing. So I just always had that in the back of my mind. And it just never sat well with me. I never had a piece about the whole technology side of it. And to be quite honest, we didn't really have that much better control using the Loop system than we did just using the Omnipod Aero system, which we were on before Loop. So once the Omnipod 5 got approved, and we finally got approval through our insurance, I was like, you know what? I really want to give this a try. There was a couple things I wasn't crazy about, but one being we couldn't use our phone to control the pod because Sarah had an iPhone and that's not compatible with Omnipod 5 at the moment. I didn't love the fact that there was not a view app with the Loop system. You can use Night Scout, which is another thing that you have to build on your computer. But there are companies out there that will build it for you and maintain it for you for like $10 a month. That's called T1 Pal. And I will put a link to that in the show notes as well, which I had to pay for that service because honestly, after having to build the Loop system, I was like, I cannot possibly build one more thing. That's going to stress me out. So I paid somebody else to do that for me. For $10 a month. But Night Scout was amazing. I could see every single treatment decision that Sarah made on Night Scout. I could see what the system was doing, whether it was giving her more basal insulin or less basal insulin. I could see what the prediction line was, like what it was predicting her glucose was going to be in a few hours. Night Scout was truly amazing. And with Omnipod 5, I lost all of that. There's no view app. I have no way of seeing what Sarah's treatment decisions were when she's not with me and I don't have the PDM to pick up with my hand and look at. So I feel a little bit more in the dark with the Omnipod 5 system, but the pros of Omnipod 5, for me at least, outweigh the cons. So I'm going to talk more about that in a separate episode, all about what our experience has been with Omnipod 5 so far. So stay tuned for that. But as for our summer 2022 in review, that's about it. Everybody went back to school about 3 or 4 weeks ago. I think we just started our fourth full week of school. And I'm happy that I can now complete a full thought without interruption. I really do love having my kids home for the summer, but I am also ready for them to go back to school once it's over. All right, you guys, I hope you found that helpful. I hope you were able to glean a little bit of information off of that, get a few nuggets of wisdom. Let me know if you have any questions or comments about that. You can always email me at sugarmamaspodcast@gmail.com. Happy to answer any of your questions or send me a DM on Instagram or Facebook. But that is it for our episode this week. As always, I'm going to link to a lot of stuff in the show notes, so be sure you check it out. There's 3 episodes that I'm going to link to. The episode with Maura McCarthy, the episode with TSA Cares, and I'll link to the episode with Stacey Sims. Remember, Stacey made a little announcement at the beginning of the show for moms in the Charlotte, North Carolina area. She's going to host a Moms Night Out event. But I actually interviewed Stacey on a previous episode, and it was a great conversation if you want to take a listen and learn more about her podcast. I'm going to link to the Loop Docs website if you want to learn more about the DIY Loop situation, and the Looped Facebook group, which is basically tech support if you are going to jump into the whole DIY Loop community. Those are 2 great resources if you're thinking about doing Loop or the Open APS system, which is the system for Android devices. I will put a link in the show notes to the Moms Night Out event that Stacey Sims mentioned. So go to that link to find out more information and sign up for that. I will also put a link to the Sim Patch patches, the Skin Tack, the IV Prep, and the Cavalon Barrier Cream, which are all the products that I mentioned we use to help keep Sarah's devices on nice and snug during the summertime. Okay, I hope you guys have a fabulous week and a relaxing weekend. I hope diabetes behaves for you. But until next time, stay calm and bolus on. Bye.